All right, Gun Talk Hunt fans, do you want to know how to keep your feeders safe? And what do you do after the season ends? All right here on Gun Talk Hunt. Hey, welcome in, Gun Talk Hunt fans. I'm your host, KJ. Welcome into another hunt-filled week. This week, we've got a special guest on. It's a special guest every week, honestly. We've got Matt Johnson of the Gun Talk team. He's joining us, looks like from the Turkey Woods. Welcome in, Matt.
Hey, how you doing, KJ? Yeah, this was a couple weeks ago. I took my son out, as you can see in that picture, trying to get him a bird here in Minnesota.
And we will definitely talk. This episode, so I reached out to you literally like 5 or 10 minutes ago, and I kind of said, "Hey, you want to be on the show?" And of course, you agreed. I don't know why you wouldn't, but I can think of many reasons why you wouldn't. but you were like, "Well, what are we going to talk about?" Well, I want to talk about a little late season turkey hunting because you still have it going on in your neck of the woods up there in Minnesota.
Yep.
And then, you know, what do you do after the season? What do you have to look forward to? What's there to do? And what hunters should be doing. So we're going to get all into all that. But right now, this Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by Timney Triggers, the world's finest triggers, and Sig Sauer. You know them. They do everything. I think that should be their new slogan, honestly. You know them. Right. They do everything.
They do. They got it all.
They got a lot. So I shipped you a couple of Benelli's.
You did. One of them is in this picture right behind me. This is the Super Black Eagle 3 in 20 gauge is what my son was using.
What a bet. That we could jump off right there and talk about, you know, those, I guess those, the sub gauges, which anything lower than a 12 gauge for turkeys have been wildly popular. So why 20 gauge? Why do you choose that?
My son is 11, and the reason for the 20 gauge, one, it's super light. So I've already got enough decoys and a vest and stuff to carry myself. So throw a sling on the 20 gauge and he is set to go. And he knows how to operate shotguns, but it's just a very nice, light, easy gun. So I have always operated in more of a run and gun situation and not. When they were real little, I would sit in a blind for hours on end. But now they kind of gotten accustomed that, let's sit for an hour, 2 hours, get up, move, that kind of
thing. Well, I mean, and if you are listening to this over the airwaves, so Matt has a picture up behind his a beautiful face. But it's a setting, and it's, you can tell they're turkey hunting. They've got a couple decoys out in front of them. They're in thick, hard woods. With just a little opening, but there's only looks like a cloth fabric front, and that is very kind of run and gun. You have time to set that up. I'm guessing that's probably a quick setup, like more of a hide.
So it is. So the particular setup that we got set here is my son's up against a tree, and I've got a little bifold blind in front of him. But the reason we ended up here is, typically during deer season, is my bow stand is not far away from here. And we know there's typically turkeys over in this area, but at the same time, we happen to hear some in this big chunk of woods out in front of us before. So we got over, but the setup can be completely done with inside of 10 minutes. Get there, I get him to sit down, and then jump in front, and it's 3 stakes, tie it down on the side, and we're set. And yeah, I walk up, put 2 decoys out, and done. And honestly, we got this one set up, and I sat down, and my habit is usually after the setup, sit down 5-10 minutes, let everything kind of just the noise settle, listen, and then I do a call. And sure enough, we had a hen get up after we set and come walking by us in front where he saw it. I couldn't because of the ridge, but it works. We saw turkeys all day, just never had anything coming close enough for them.
How do you shift your tactics later season? Because we're late season, and by the time this show airs, we're at NRA show, and you've got literally days left in your season. So Guys looking to fill tags, like, how are you shifting your tactics?
It's by now, if you don't know where they're roosting yet by now, that's obviously the number one issue. But after they come down, It's got to be run and gun this time of year. Yeah. It's really hard. And to me, it's a lot more visual of a game now because they've been called, depending on the property you're at and how big it is. We always hear during deer hunting, it's like, well, can you really manage deer on 200 acres versus 1,000 acres? Well, same thing, I'd say even more so with turkeys because they're such a mobile bird. If you're hunting on 200 acres versus 1,000, if you're on 1,000 acres, I mean, you can move around. You've got a pattern pretty well set. But if they're on a much smaller piece, it's a lot more work. But on 1,000 acres, if it's yours, you kind of know the amount of pressure they've been on. If you're on a smaller piece, you don't know what pressure is on around you. And so that's why I say they could have been called out a bunch by this time of year. So it becomes much more of a visual game because they're not going to talk back because they've heard a lot being screamed at them.
Well, and it's an interesting like quandary because you talk about small parcels versus large parcels of property. But I find like now, like this time of the year, a turkey's range of how far they're traveling has shrunk massively. Because that's where I've had my most success is really locating those haunts where they've tucked themselves back because of the calling. They're tired of it, man. Oh. They're hearing, you know, those yelps and stuff all in all directions. And I find that at least in our neck of the woods, like they really don't travel as much as they would normally do maybe in early season.
On the flip side of it, most of the hens have probably been bred already. And so calling still works. It's just that when you call, you may need to sit a little longer because they're going to come sneaking in on you.
Yeah, they get quiet.
They're still interested in what's going on. It's like, ooh, there's one more lady out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a definite possibility. You know, we're going to like flip a switch real quick. I got to get your thoughts on it before we move on to the gear talk, because we had a lot of guys. And Matt, if you didn't hear the show last week, it was basically Kevin's rant about feeders or Kevin's advice when hunting around feeders and stuff like that. And I want to reach out to those guys that reached out to me and said, hey, did you forget about mentioning bears? Did you forget about mentioning coyote predation around feeders and how they're starting to stack up and targeting animals coming into feeders? And thank you for bringing that to my attention. Thankfully, I don't have to worry about bears. You do. And I don't, you know, I've never really talked to you about feeders, but how do you deal if you feed, like how do you deal with that in bears?
So Minnesota bear, I've never hunted bears in Minnesota. I've often,
shame on you,
I've only hunted bears twice in my life. But that said, I do deer hunt in northern Minnesota where all the bears are. And I've had in the last 3 years now, we've got a bear that is still awake and roaming in early November when we're up there, which is always an interesting thing because, as you know, with bears, they're very quiet walkers. And so as much as we're talking about the silence of turkeys, bears are worse. And so that's an eerie feeling in the dark when you're walking.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and bears are becoming a real topic of conversation here in Minnesota because the lottery for permits is getting going. And then we have a 2 week baiting season prior to the season opening or a 2 week window of bait stations. It's outside of that, as far as deer feeders and stuff, that's all illegal in Minnesota and especially where I bow hunt in southern Minnesota.
Well, there you go.
Of CWD, they eliminate any kind of feeding. So even like recreational feeding is gone for where I am. So from that standpoint, that's
okay.
Feeding and bait stations are not something I'm really into.
Okay. So what's the difference? So you cannot feed the wildlife.
In the area where I deer hunt, no.
Okay. So you can't put out a salt lick. You can't put out corn. You can't go sprig any, no magic dust, nothing like that.
Nothing temporary. Now going and putting a food plot in, there's, agriculture or planting, that's a different story.
See, you know where I'm going. So what's the difference? You're drawing them in one way or the other. One just happens to be a more permanent location.
The way I understand our DNR defines the difference is the food plot is more permanent and long-term versus someone going, throwing out a 5-gallon pail, of corn and it's gone in 5, 10 days or whatever
but
else.
There's a right way to do it. I mean, those, like, I mean, I take this as an example, and I know there's a lot of people against it, but I look at, like, look at, like, Texas. Mm-hmm. High fence, they're feeding, they're out of feeders because that's how you draw the deer in, that's how you keep them fed, because there's not a lot of places for food plots and stuff like that. And right. They're doing it right, but they're able to feed year round. They feed protein, and I come to realize that in a lot of these outfits, it's not corn they're throwing. They are throwing the, you know, like sorghum, or they've got chickpeas in there. They've got all these different legumes that are in these feeders, rather than, like, it's not just corn. It's not a corn feeder, but they're actually, like, providing all the nutrients, and they're doing it year round. So my question would be, if there were stipulations in, like, your states like Minnesota, where you can't produce a feeder, but what if you weren't just doing corn? What if you were doing actual nutrients that they would find out in the wild or in a food plot?
Which is, that's interesting, because I've never gotten into the conversation of what guys are actually feeding, because everything you just mentioned, guys up here are putting that in the ground to grow already. So what's your point? And that's a common conversation of, well, what's the difference of putting a feeder out versus a food plot? Because as the same point you made, they both draw them in, and it's, the definition is based on time frame in which the food source is available.
Right.
Because in the rule books in Minnesota, if corn is put out in an area where you can, so only certain counties are restricted from that sort of thing.
Okay.
But now if you're in a county that's not restricted and you put corn out, or you put some sort of food source out, you can't hunt that spot for 10 days after it was put out. So that's why I say it's a window of time is how they're defining it.
That's tough. But again, that goes back to, like, how do you keep bears from, you know, how do you keep bears off your feeder if you're in an area that has bears? And and really, how do you stop predation around your feeders? Two things that I could touch on that. So I've actually had, like, so before the sun comes up, I'm sitting there in my deer stand, and this is, I've never seen this before, and I wish I would have. I was using an ATN.
Okay.
And, you know, just scanning the field right before I'm, you know, that daylight comes up, I can kind of see some deer out there, and there's deer on the edge of the fields.
Yep.
But three coyotes come out and they cross this field from about 700 yards. They come all the way into the feeder and they hang around the feeder. And when I'm looking at them through the ATN, they're eating out of my feeder. They are eating, like, all the corn. And I'm like, what are they doing? But they were just hanging out, like, that was a spot, obviously, like, they know this area, and and they were coming out, and they were just causing havoc around the feeder, and they, you know, nothing's going to come in. Yeah. But I've never seen that before, but they were eating out of the feeder. It was interesting.
I've never heard of that before. It would make sense to me for them to hang in the weeds just beyond the feeder, you know, intercepting, because that's just in their predatorial nature. But I've never heard of them, of actual predators eating out of the feeder like that. So, bears, yes. I know I have plenty of people that have cabins up in northern Minnesota where bird feeders are commonly hit by bears and deer alike, and how to, you know, go around that sort of thing. Feeding is just not a big thing in Minnesota. That's
so through feeders. Okay. So after this break from our sponsors, I am going to share with you my two solutions for eliminating coyotes and bears from around your feeders. But this episode is brought to you by Sig Sauer. The Cross Precision Hunting Bolt Action Rifle is great. You've heard me talking about it. It's lightweight for you backcountry hunters or hunters. This is perfect for you because it shaves pounds when you're trying to cut where necessary. Super precise. I'm getting great groups with mine right now. It's available in a 277 Sig Fury, which is a 16-inch barrel. So if you want to trim a little bit more off your weight, go that route. A 308 and a 6.5 Creedmoor with an 18-inch barrel. I love them both. But visit SigSauer.com because they are designed and built right here in the USA. And Timney Triggers. Timney Triggers is committed to producing the world's finest trigger for over 75 years. How do I know it's over 75 years? I've seen the advertisements. So you're getting another one right here. But it's a lifetime guaranteed on Timney because they will repair or replace your trigger in the event it becomes damaged or defective at no charge to you. That's massive in my book. So upgrade your hunting season with a Mossberg LBA long action, a Winchester 70, or Elite Hunter Remington 700 trigger. I love that one. But visit them at timneytriggers.com. All right. I'm talking with Matt Johnson here of the Gun Talk team. Avid hunter. I've seen this man put some miles on boots in the Western hunting lands. Very proficient. But we're talking feeders right now. We're going to get into a little bit of what you should be doing after hunting seasons are over.
Yeah.
But we're talking about what do you do with predation around your feeders and damage to your feeders by bears. Let's address that one first.
Yeah.
Matt doesn't have to deal with this because it's illegal in his area, and always check your regulations.
Yeah.
I don't think I can say that enough. Don't just go out there slinging feed. Check your local regulations, your state regulations. But okay, you got a bear problem. Man, yeah. Electrify it.
Yeah, the thing is, I 100% agree and endorse that because they've gotten to be so easy to install. And so efficient as far as solar power going out to a battery, and the price point is not crazy for what you're looking to do.
Right. And that's going to stop raccoons. That's going to really stop them from getting in there. Or if you have real low feeders, I've noticed this too, deer will turn their head sideways. They'll get in there and they'll start licking with their tongue because they got really long tongues.
Yeah,
they do. They'll start moving that spinner. They'll start moving the spinning plate, getting that feed out. And when you don't want that thing to go off, now you've got a deer sitting there licking the spinning wheel, and they empty out your feeder a little too quick if they do that. Yeah. So just simply adding like a little bit of electricity to that, and it doesn't take a lot.
No.
You know, I mean, animals are a lot like humans are. At least they're a lot like what I think my kids are. You know, oh, hey, don't touch that hot stove.
Right.
What do they do?
Yep.
They touch it. But how many times are they going to touch it?
Once. All right. So I got to tell you this story. So where I grew up in West Central Minnesota, we were out at some family friend's place and they raised livestock, and we're out just my brother and myself and two of the friends' kids and dorking around out in the yard. And as any big brother does when electric fence is nearby.
Oh no, don't
grab me and the fence, you know? So I was under 10. So I got that was my first real understanding of how electric current can go through you. So
I will tell you. So my first experience with an electric fence is, well, I mean, it was exactly that. My dad tells me, you know, well, don't pee on that fence. Use your imagination. What happened next? Well, little KJ's running around out in the field, has to go to the bathroom and going, I wonder why he told me not to pee on that.
Zip.
They got a little bit of yo out of me at that point.
So we talk about how you do it once. Well, I get older. And when I say older, I'm now in high school, and we had a Dalmatian, and if anyone out there has had a Dalmatian, they know that Dalmatians can be runners and are just high energy too. And we had one that loved to get my mom's flower beds and would dig stuff up. So my dad, being a farmer, is like, that's it. He threw a hot wire up around it. Well, it was the one we installed was a bad pack. So it was very low voltage and very just low energy to it, to the point where you could walk up, if you bumped it, you felt like a 9-volt battery tick to it, nothing crazy. So I come back from school one day with a buddy and he sees it and I'm like, dude, check this out. And I grab the fence thinking it's just low, not knowing my dad switched it that day.
Oh no.
Damn near threw me. Oh, my, just about threw me on my back.
That's pretty good. Oh, okay. So
considerable to my dad.
Electricity works as a deterrent.
Do not mess.
Cause with it. I'll tell you right now, I haven't peed on an electric fence since then.
Nope. No, I stay clear. I'm very skittish to electric fences.
Man, our other issue is the coyotes. And the email I got and I think this is probably a pretty good number, is they're seeing around feeders and stuff like a 60% kill rate on fawns, or, you know, a predation percentage around areas with feeders. So when, and I've got a buddy who does this, and he says every year it gets fewer and fewer, which makes sense. If he has a coyote come in to range, and if he's hunting around that feeder area, he is no longer deer hunting. He is coyote hunting.
Yeah.
And it's just eliminating those coyotes. I mean, you've got to call in the off season. You've got to really put the screws, I think, to your predators in that area.
Yeah.
My other thought is, you know, when you go into a wintering season for deer, if you're just feeding corn, you are going to kill a lot of your deer population because they cannot sustain themselves on that food source.
I agree 100% on that. And I think it's in the last 5 years, I feel like that knowledge is starting to get, and message is starting to get out even more and more and more, even though, and I think where it stems from is we all know that the corn is one of the last crops taken out in the fall. And it's like, man, the deer are just in the corn. They love it. Well, they do, because at that point they want the calories and the fat and everything at that point in time. But it is, that time of year is also the rut where they need instant energy and instant calories, that kind of thing. Whereas they'd rather take acorns and other things over that, but that's the most viable source at that point in time. The other thing is when you see immediate winter feeding from conservation, or not conservation group, but like state wildlife departments, it's usually alfalfa and something of that nature. And so those always are typically the two you see, right? Yeah. Where now guys are starting to understand, organizations are talking about, it's like, no, if you truly are going to feed your deer year round, it's season by season, you need to alter what you're feeding them based on the deer's diet is. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from a buddy of mine that is a rabid coyote guy and deer hunter down in Iowa is, deer are like humans. They love variety. Yeah. Don't just give them one thing. If you give them one thing and your neighbor's got variety, you're not going to see any deer. So
no. You're going to get them taken away.
Or planting or both, mix it up.
Yeah. And the other thing is I think on the coyote issue, and we'll put this to rest, is when you switch from that corn to, you know, a wintering feed, or maybe even a protein in the spring when they're starting to fawn, maybe put your feeders more out in the open. Don't tuck them away as much as you would like to, and give those, maybe that will, and I haven't tried this, but maybe it starts to rethink my choices on where I put my feeders in those seasons, to give them a chance to escape instead of getting ambushed, maybe.
Yeah. I
don't know if it'll work.
That makes sense, but feeders aren't exactly easy to put out and move and stuff like that. So, I mean, it takes,
yeah, depending on what you got.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to, and thank you, Thomas and Mark, for reaching out to me. And if you guys ever want to reach out to me and call me out, or just say, hey, have you thought about this, reach out to me at kj@guntalk.com. I love getting you guys' reactions, and I love getting your questions. So we'll help as much as we can. Let's transition to, okay, it's after season. What do we do next? Walk me through kind of your routine on how you evaluate your year and how you move forward.
So I start evaluating my year immediately in January. So that's just based out of profession too, because ATA is going on, then SHOT Show takes place. And so it's at the forefront of like, okay, where I think I can actually go hunting. And now I know I'm done. It's into fast mode of work, but I take assessment, and I, like a lot of guys, I'm sure, and a lot of people, I should say, is I think about it all the time, is I just kind of reevaluate, okay, what was a point where I missed an opportunity and what caused it? And really start to think about that moment, is looking back at it. And at 2 years ago, I had that moment where I was sitting in a tree and the wind was just howling, but I was like, okay, I'm going to mentally give up this spot behind me. And I focused everywhere else. And sure enough, I had a real nice deer cross the creek and come in right behind me. And it replayed my mind as I think back about it. It's like, well, the wind was strong enough that my scent blew straight out instead of just falling down behind me. So it literally blew over the top of him. And what busted me was my bag shifted when he was at 15 yards behind me.
Oh.
And then he ran out. He never did finally booger and like scream out of me because he ran from 15 to 50. I couldn't get a shot, but he looked back as like, what was that? And then just crossed the river and went back along his merry way.
Right.
But the entire time he was directly downwind from me.
Yeah.
So at two things occurred. One is I was very happy. I was like, okay, obviously the scent control I had on worked. And so mental check, as long as I keep doing that, I'll be okay. But number two, just because the wind is blowing like that, don't 100% give up behind you, because I did. And I missed an opportunity that at 15 yards, I should have been easily killed a deer.
That's a closing the deal type of situation.
That same point I want to add in here too, is now last year, I'm actually starting to get into this. My son is starting to take into hunting a lot more. He had a moment last year. I think I told you this one time when we were together, it was right at sunrise. We heard noise in the woods. We're sitting over a picked bean field. And I told him, like, hey, you know, get ready. There's a noise. There might be a deer. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, we don't even know it's a deer, so whatever. And he didn't have the gun on him. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, this doe walks up broadside at 20, 25 yards. And he's got a muzzleloader on him. And he just couldn't get situated and turned fast enough before she walked straight away from us and never got a shot. We just talked about that on this turkey hunt 2 weekends ago. But hey, really? Remember how we were sitting over there? And so starting to replay into his mind, it's like, just little thing. I start doing that in the off season of like, where did I miss? How close could I have been? How did it happen? Because now it's not like I can go out and correct it immediately, but I can sit and actually ponder on it and let it fester a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of go over. And if you guys aren't keeping like a hunting journal, and okay, I just got to get off my butt and do it, but I'm going to write basically a hunting journal, and I'll make this available online, and I'll make it super cheap. But if you're not keeping a hunting journal, I would suggest it, because this is exactly where I think would help you, because you could replay that exact hunt, wind, everything like that. You can make notes immediately after your hunts. But that's where it helps me. And I do the exact same thing you do. After the season's over, I look at the holes. I don't want to say it's a game, but the holes in my game, you know, like a basketball player would go back and look at film.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes we don't have that. Like, we don't have that ability. You know, I mean, you were a college football player, and you would spend hours and hours and hours in film study, looking over your mistakes and what the opponent's doing. Well, if you don't film every one of your hunts, like, there's no way to replay that. And how do we do that? And I keep a written journal and like on my boys. And so now I've got a collection of all these little notebooks and pads and papers and, you know, down the line, like, it'll be cool to look at, but how cool will it be for like when I'm gone for my boys to be able to show their kids and go, man, hey, on this day, your dad was, you know, in a stand, the wind was howling 30 miles an hour. Right. And here's the lessons he learned from that. How cool is that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I've had the opportunity to actually journal, but I just have not gotten into it. And a lot of it is just time, I guess, because after the hunt, I come in and I get undressed and the change and hang out, and it's okay, guys, it's dark. I'm with the guys, and it just, you know, it's food and it's a beverage, and it goes from there. Well,
and Matt, how many times in the stand are you sitting there going, I'll just get on my phone?
Oh, yeah.
Come
way
on.
Too many times.
So instead of a phone, carry a notepad.
I never thought about that. I guess just that's an easy thing, but it should be that is doing that sort of thing. And I guess
tell you right now,
a lot of instances. What's that?
This little thing right here is why we are becoming, and I'm holding up a cell phone, is why we are becoming less proficient hunters.
Yes. Yeah. Well, when I missed my deer 2 years ago, I was not on my phone. I will admit that. And we missed turkeys this year with my son because he took a nap and I was checking out
I've been there. I've been in both those situations quite often.
Right.
But no, I think it was, you know, probably 12 to 13 years ago where I really started like counting the number of times where I was looking down instead of just being in that experience and being in the outdoors. And how many deer have walked past me and I either didn't realize it or I was caught with your pants down.
Right.
And it was way too much. And it still happens to me.
Yep. It does. And sadly that's part of, we become less woodsmen that way, but it is part of just where the world has gone today is because you have it on you. But the other part I do in the off season is I take a quick inventory of certain parts of my gear. Like my clothes, my boots, and I'm always evaluating that as the year goes, as the weather changes up here and everything else. But like, I'm checking out, like, how's my rangefinder? Is that still intact? Functioning correctly? Did I have any errors on that? Cause, I ended up changing rangefinders last year because I started having multiple times where I was getting wrong readings. And just at the same time, my rangefinder was 15 years old. So it was starting to go.
Yeah.
Do I like my binos? Is there something else? I mean, trying not to become, you know, down that rabbit hole of what gear do I need or do I just want, but what is actual viable?
Yeah.
And then I take all my trail cameras and we started converting them over to spy points and cellular service. And so updating all the software and cleaning the literally physically cleaning cameras out. You know, just some of that kind of stuff is the other part where I get more into that in the spring because I'm like, when I go turkey hunting, it's like, well, I'm going to bring a couple cameras with and just put them out just to have to see what deer are moving back around now or who survived, that kind of stuff.
End of the year gear check is kind of where I was headed with this. And you didn't even know it. I didn't prep you for it, but I kind of sit back and I do the same thing. I evaluate like, man, you know, this system worked really well for cold weather. And so I organize it all. Like I've laid everything out because at the end of the season, and I would hate for you to see my garage it is filled with stuff. Cause I come in, I dump everything, put it back kind of where I think it goes. And then I just grab it and go. And so I'm spending a lot of time organizing. And like you said, analyzing those little pieces of gear that I find like either worked or they didn't work. And again, I can go back into my field notes and put like, you know, man, my feet are really cold today. And, you know, I'll make a note on what I was wearing. So I don't make the same mistake because I'm going to sleep in between season and next season. And I forget. I'm getting older too.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when my season gets over is I enjoy getting out in December when I can. Unfortunately, both my kids now downhill ski. So come about Thanksgiving time, early December, a lot of my hunting gear gets dumped into my workspace in the basement and all the hunting stuff gets cleared off the workbench. The ski vices go up. So now I'm waxing and sharpening skis every week. And literally all my hunting gear finally got put away at the end of February. And then all the ski gear got put away at the end of March. Cleaned everything up, and now I've got trail cameras on my bench, and I got arrows to build and that kind of stuff.
But,
I'm the same way. I guess a number of years ago, what I did is I ended up getting those Rubbermaid totes, and I've got one just for all the blaze orange clothes, one for spring turkey, and one for fall deer. And so it's a matter of grabbing the big tote and pulling it out, and just it's a mess when it gets in there. But at least I know that it's like, okay, this season, grab this tote out, and it sits on the floor, and everything goes in and out of there.
It's easy to do. And when you get into that next season, that next hunting season, you know, it's ready to go.
Right.
That's what I love about getting it organized, squared away, put up. Everybody's happy around the house. Like my wife loves the end of hunting season, not because I'm home more, it's because stuff gets cleaned up,
put away. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess those are the things. And then the other part of it too, is not only the gear check is, I start thinking about, okay, next season and looking at is, I mean, we've both got kids that are now actively hunting. And so I got to hunt 2 days last year on my own.
Oh my gosh.
And then the rest of it, I was with one of my kids in the stand hunting, and I hunted one day for turkeys this year. And the rest of it was with my son. And so I started looking at that. It's like, okay, I know this weekend is going to be dedicated to my daughter. This weekend is going to be dedicated to my son. Well, now my daughter is wanting to shoot archery. So she's like, I want to get proficient in the summer. So Now it's like, okay, let's get the bows adjusted because she's now 13. So I got to draw weight and length and that kind of stuff. But now I got to start thinking about, okay, when in September, October, can I get her out too? So she can have a shot at it and come down with us. So my mind starts to turn to what do I need to do for prep next year? And a buddy and I have been applying for Iowa. And so we've got enough points. So we'll be headed down to the Iowa-Missouri line here and figuring out when we're going to do that in October to not completely miss the nice pre-rut or pre-gun season here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
That's where my, now that turkey season's out of my head, that's where I've evolved to is planning the fall.
Yeah. That's, I mean, when draws start coming out, that's, oh man, that's, you got to do it. You got to start prepping for next season. I've already got like my plans. Like I think we've been coddling our youth way too much. I've been putting them on all the best deer. You know what? It's time to take our hunting season back. I'm going to put them on a weight training program. They're going to drag my deer out for me. They're going to quarter it. They're going to butcher it. So I think that's what I'm going to start doing with my boys is I'm going to just like, look, you need to earn this. That's my crazy play. I'm not going to do that, obviously, but that's what, maybe I should do that.
Well, I don't think I'm not far off from that in reality. And my kids both know this and they're both a little nervous. So the first year they both were on the trigger, they both killed.
Yeah.
Last year, my daughter didn't get a shot at a deer at all. My son, we had opportunities, but just never completed. And I gave them both grief. I'm like, you guys didn't shoot anything because you're scared that this next deer you're going to have to clean.
Yeah.
Because I've told them both, my first deer is on the house.
Yeah.
After that, now you get to learn how to field dress. And so I gave them both grief about that last year. And they both looked at it and was like, big shit ass grins on their face. Like, no, not at all what it is. And I'm like, oh, I know that's in your mind.
All right. That's when, you know, the saying, the fun's all over once you pull that trigger.
Exactly.
But
well, maybe, there's about a half hour of work in there. And then the true long term celebration begins again.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
So,
all right.
But no, my kids, they know that the next deer, they will be hands on and hands in.
Same thing. I do that with my boys. So, all right, Matt, thanks for joining Gun Talk Hunt. Always a pleasure having you on.
Always fun.
All right, Gun Talk fans, man, reach out to me, kj@guntalk.com. If you want to hear a certain subject talked about, we'll talk about it. We'll discuss. But other than that, man, keep those muzzles pointing in a safe direction and always be on the hunt.